Welcome, everyone, to the episode 3 of the Office Hours podcast. Today, we have with us Mo, who has even more questions for us, and let's get into it.
Hello, Vasily. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you. How about you?
I'm doing good. It's a weekend already, so I'm excited. I'm looking forward to activities of the weekend, but, it's always good to talk to you. Good timing to learn, take some things into the weekend to think about. So really excited. I have questions for you today.
Excellent.
And one thing I was thinking about asking you is we've had our relationship and for some time now. So I was wondering, I never really asked you, have you ever had mentors like this before yourself?
It's kind of interesting. There was recently a survey on a website, it's an IT related website, and they were asking about questions. And it's hey, this is a survey about mentorship. I'm like, oh, mentorship, that's right down my alley. And they start asking all of these questions about me having a mentor. And I'm like,
yeah.
Ooh, I haven't really done that extensively. Nowhere near the level that we are doing, both of us.
Yeah.
So at one of the companies, I kind of floated this idea that it would be nice to have some kind of mentorship for more of a leadership role. And they actually created a whole thing about it. It was basically a group thing where they started talking about leadership topics. And it kind of quickly evolved into something that I didn't really think about. It kind of gotten way too big. And then HR got involved, and then HR started picking topics, and then it was just completely not what I was looking for. So that was, I mean, it was good that they tried, but I guess they thought we can't have just one guy have mentors. We have to have it open for everybody, and fair enough. Yeah, that's true. But it turned into something a little bit more bureaucratic and kind of annoying and slow. And it was just not as effective. So I think that was kind of the extent of it. So I guess to answer your question, no, not really. Not like this. And I think that it would be interesting to do.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was responding to that survey, they say what is the why is mentoring useful? And I my response was mentoring is useful to kind of let you know that you're not the first person in that situation. Someone has been there before where you are right now, and they mm-hmm. can give you some advice. But the difficulty with that is that, it's difficult to ask right questions, because if I want to ask right questions, I need to know where I am going so I can ask the right questions about it. And right now, maybe I don't really have a very clear picture of that. I mean, I kind of do. My role is progressing, or rather I'm progressing in my role toward the next step. But I don't know if there is anything that I can do in the short term that is sort of quick that can make big difference to it. So I'm just sort of staying on the chosen path.
So at your office now, they have mentors for everyone. They're offering everyone mentors.
That was a different company. This company where I'm currently at, they also have a mentorship program, but I haven't looked into it yet.
Okay. But hypothetically, if you had a mentor, what would you be looking to? How would you be using this relationship?
That is a good question. I haven't really had a chance to fully think about it, in a sense. So when I was answering that survey yesterday, I was how would I be using it? So to be honest, I don't know. I haven't thought about it yet. Maybe next episode I'll have my thoughts about it and we can chat about that.
All right. Okay, next episode. Because I was just thinking about asking you. I thought like maybe you would have some interesting experience about it.
Mm.
But I'll keep that in my next episode.
Okay.
So another thing I wanted to ask you is that I was just curious to ask you also like things that you're learning about these days. Because these days I find myself learning a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And then I find myself just in like it's getting a lot. Like, you know, there's all this like a Midjourney AI thing.
Yeah.
And there is also like different things coming up these days that I was just like looking into. And then I was wondering, like, why am I even doing all this thing? And also, even more technologies that we're using at work. So I found myself in like a learning pool, kind of feeling like, you know, questioning myself. So I was wondering, like, maybe I need like some to ask you if how you learn new things, how you prioritize the new things that you learn, and how you give yourself, because outside of work, you want to also spend time to like learn some other things too. So I was wondering, like, are you learning something new these days, and how do you prioritize this new thing?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I am learning new things. So right now, because we decided to start filming these sessions and publish them in the form of a podcast,
mm-hmm.
a lot of my learning outside of work focus has shifted to things pertaining to like podcasts. So like video editing, you know, cutting, recording. I have to sort of remember a bunch of skills from before. Mm-hmm. For like audio processing and things like that, and like how to use DaVinci, how to do all of these different things, you know. So it's less oriented toward actually like learning some sort of new programming language. That for next couple of weeks probably is gonna be taking a backseat. I think I have my workflow mostly established for this because, mm-hmm. I mean, let's face it, it's not particularly sophisticating. There's like no crazy editing. There's no fancy cuts or anything like that. Yes. It's just two guys talking to one another. It still takes a little bit of effort, you know, like cleaning up the audio recording, you know, applying some effects, making sure the green screen works out correctly and things like that. Doing the subtitling. Which is actually, the subtitles are actually generated by LLM type AI thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm using Whisper. It is quite impressive because in our previous episodes, there were a couple of spots where it's difficult for me to hear a specific word that's been said, but that thing picked it up like no problem. So it's really crazy.
Yeah.
It's really crazy. Yeah. But it's very helpful because it literally just spits out a subtitles file for me, which I can import into Resolve, and it just shows up with all of the words. I just have to tweak the timings a little bit, which is nice. Saves a lot of time doing transcription and whatnot.
Do you know, like these days, like I was going to share some of my experience with like the new AI tools coming up these days.
Mm-hmm.
Like I started doing like YouTube shorts, and I realized that there are some tools that you can actually use to generate that YouTube short, like multiple YouTube shorts within a few minutes, literally. So I'm starting to feel impressed by all these AIs now, and I'm wondering like whose ideas like at this thing, because they really help to reduce a lot of like work time on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
For example, like you can create like YouTube short on different videos that already exist. In one of the videos would be like Cristiano Ronaldo, for example. You can create like 30 or 40 YouTube shorts just about like different times that he has been on the pitch, and it gives you correct accurate caption of each of these videos. And it's just really impressive, these things. But I guess, like, at some point, maybe it will be more clear how this data actually, like, gets processed. Mm-hmm. Because it's pretty impressive.
Yeah. No, this technology, it's quite impressive in its results. I think in terms of actual value, imagine us like just drowning in the sea of AI generated shorts and like barely any original content. That's kind of, I don't know. I'm not as optimistic about that part of it because it makes it easy. Like, you know, you ever see those weird YouTube videos which are like AI generated image with AI generated text narrated by text to speech, and there's like 30 channels posting basically same videos and get monetized. So it's like this gigantic money-making scheme that brings zero value except for people who are monetizing it. But it's increasing the amount of noise that we have to deal with to figure out what is good and what is not. So AI just makes it so much easier for these types of things. I'm not really a big fan of that. And I also remember we talked a couple of months ago when ChatGPT kind of came about. I remember you being like very excited about it.
I know.
Yes, yes. And I was saying, like, just you wait until some doctor or some lawyer gets sued because they use ChatGPT and something went wrong. And I have since seen both doctors. Even recently, like yesterday, I think I saw it on Hacker News that some lawyers got in trouble for using ChatGPT. I think it was like generated court briefs that were not like properly done, or I don't remember specifics, but they were using ChatGPT to do their legal stuff and they got in trouble for it. So I kind of called it, but I mean, it's pretty easy to call. Like that stuff is going to be used poorly and somebody will get in trouble for it. And it is happening, and I think it's going to be happening more and more as well.
But this is normal. This is like it doesn't change the kind of trouble they could have gotten into anyway. See, for example, like if you give ChatGPT a prompt to generate a certain text for you, and you give it as a lawyer, and you're reading this thing, you don't vet it before actually going to court with it. That's your problem. It's not GPT's problem. That's an incompetence on the lawyer's part.
That is true. But I would say I would give stuff for ChatGPT to do if I don't want to do it myself. Because if ChatGPT has to do it and then I have to check it, I might as well just do it because it's going to take the same amount of time for me to do it versus verifying that it did everything correctly. But to me, the way I see it is you ask ChatGPT to do something 9 times and you verify it and it gives you a very correct result. And now you think, oh, it's always right. And you kind of get relaxed. And something slips through the cracks, and that's when these things start happening. So even if you're very, very diligent in the beginning, it becomes very difficult to stay diligent the entire time, because if it consistently gives you something good, every time it gives you something good, you'd be less and less inclined to verify that everything is right. Like I even noticed it. Like I was processing the subtitles. I mean, we're only shooting episode 3 right now. And I did 2 episodes, and I did episode 1. I put the audio through Whisper. I had to correct a couple of things because it spelled my name slightly differently. But when I was doing the second one, I was like, damn, that thing is so good. So I kind of just skimmed it. I haven't actually read through it. So there could be errors in it, right? And it's because I don't want to spend 2 hours manually transcribing the entire conversation. It's not fun. You know, it's quite boring. And so you delegate it to a tool. And sometimes that tool is wrong. And if I have to spend 2 hours to verify that the tool is correct, it saved me on some typing, sure, but it's still something I'd rather not do. And yeah, it is my fault if there's errors in there, as it was the lawyer's fault because they filed something that wasn't for the standard required. But the point is that we're only human. These things are just going to happen. And ChatGPT will aid people. And sometimes the other problem is too, because it's very convincing. It can tell you things with 100% certainty, which are completely bogus. And if you yourself don't have the skill level to recognize that these facts are bogus, you're just going to take them at face value. And that's where more problems are going to occur because, you know, you just don't know if it's good enough. You know, it's like if you delegate to a junior developer the task of hiring a senior developer for the team. Like, they can't tell. They don't possess the skill to tell if the person in front of them is actually legit or not. Because they could be just full of BS. They could be spewing all sorts of abbreviations and lingo and jargon. And for a person who doesn't know any better, they'd be like, wow, they're talking about all of these things. They must be really smart. Like, they know what they're talking about. And in fact, like, no, they just taking you for a ride. And that actually happened to me to some extent. I got kind of very impressed with a fellow that we were interviewing. And the rest of my team was mostly not impressed with him, but he kind of managed to bamboozle me with a lot of very, like, he was like dropping all the right keywords in the conversation. And I was like, I do that. Like, there was a lot of rapport there, and we ended up hiring him, and he ended up being not good at all. So since then, I am very cautious about people who like do a lot of like kind of name dropping and things like that in interviews, because I'm like, ooh, you could be full of shit.
Yeah, absolutely. But you see, it's like this is my view on ChatGPT, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the purpose of these things, for example, I don't know, there is also like more of this coming up now, like with the new Microsoft Bing search. I forgot what Microsoft named it on. Mm-hmm. And then there's also Bard, Google Bard. You see, the thing about this thing is like they are not like human. There are different ways. Like, there's difference in like human research and this AI research. The purpose of it is for it to do the search for you. Mm-hmm. So instead of you having to say, for example, you want to know about like top 10 countries, the most spoken language in the world, for example, like hypothetically, and on topics like how to integrate something into your project or something like that. Mm-hmm. So instead of having to read like 10 different blogs to find this solution, you get a summarized research in like a few sentences, something that you can actually go on to use if if that's what you're looking for.
Yeah.
So like, it's not supposed to be taken out. And even I think on ChatGPT, they put it there like the results might not be true. Like, they're not responsible for you accepting it as a fact, like 100%. So I think it depends on how people use it. So how you use it is what really like depends.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. But you gotta remember that they had a reason to put a warning sticker on a microwave telling people not to try drying their pets in it. That's all I'm going to say.
Are you saying people actually did that before? Like, dry their pets?
Maybe it's an urban legend, but I would not be surprised. Like, the amount of obvious safety labels on things is kind of exhausting at some point in time. You just like, why would you have to put a sticker saying, please don't jump off a bridge on a bridge, unless people actually do? And if people choose to jump off that particular bridge with ChatGPT, that's on them. I am mostly skeptical. It's very flashy, I give it that. But and it has its uses, but I am pretty skeptical, especially like when it comes to search and summarizing search results and like finding information for you. Like, we all know that modern search engines are very biased and very biasable, if that's even a word. And the company controlling the search engine tailors what it presents to you. So it can selectively omit information, it can signal boost some kinds of information, and it can completely eliminate other kinds of information. And that is affecting our public discourse. And to the extent that the search engine is doing it, ChatGPT type AI can do it even better. right? And so to me, that is dangerous. And
we're already in this danger, huh? I think. We're already in this danger.
Yeah, but, you know, just because we already sold some of our soul doesn't mean we have to keep selling the rest.
Nah,
but, you know.
I feel like we sold a lot because outside of ChatGPT, the data from there, it depends on how you use it. For example, like your browser, the information that these browsers like get from your search or like the website that you visit, if you have like the IoT devices, those things constantly listening to everything around you, your phone itself, Siri, Google, OK Google, Hey Siri, those guys constantly listening and waiting for like a prompt. I just said this to you that my phone is up.
Yeah, and, exactly. And anybody who's going to be listening to this, their phone is going to be up too.
You see, and so like all these things are already there. So like this, like being at this point, there's really nothing to be scared of you, except like because we've really given up a lot. Like social media now, if you have like social media. In fact, there's so many data points, like so many. But so for me, using tools like ChatGPT, Google Bard, or Bing Search, like these things are just like there to make research a bit less tedious. That to me is like the purpose.
Yeah.
Not for you to go to like take a face value without verification and just go to places like the courtroom. Legal places or like, you know.
Yeah.
And also ChatGPT's data is like, I think it's up to 2021. So like anything that happened between 21 to 23 right now, I don't think it's up to date in its information. So like, yeah.
Well, they'll keep training it. It's not that it's always going to stay that way.
Exactly. But up at this moment, it's just, I think it's still up to 2021. So, like, you really don't have a lot of reason to take it like, oh, 100% ChatGPT says this. So then you go, because information needs to be, especially when you do research, you have to verify. But if you do use it for, in our industry, if you use it for like, verifying or like improving your codes or like finding better ways to do your test or like doing like review for you, like those kind of things, easy. And also, if you use it to like verify your code, like if it returns like codes that you know wouldn't work, you would not just take it and just play. Chat it's gonna work.
You know, there's so many subtle ways a code could not work. In fact, There is this thing called the underhanded C competition or something along those lines. And the goal of that competition is to produce a program code, like a source code in C language that has some stated goals, but when compiled and executed, actually does some nefarious goals in the background by carefully constructing the source code. Maybe it's like omitting some semicolon somewhere that completely changes how that the behavior of program is affected. But to the casual observer, if you look at it, you would read through the source code and be like, oh yeah, this program just prints out hello world. But in fact, it's like formatting your hard drive. Like, so the whole point is that the source code is believably correct and without nefarious intent. But in reality, it's full of nefarious intent, and it's very difficult for a casual reader to know that. Mm-hmm. Now imagine ChatGPT getting trained on a corpus of code that contains a bunch of code like that, and suddenly it starts introducing all of these nefarious things that would pass a casual code review. Like, how do you deal with these things? I think it just opens such a big Pandora's box of things that we are completely unprepared for. And people are hyping it because, oh, it renders pretty pictures or it like writes text like crazy. But we haven't seen nothing yet. And I'll stay very cautiously pessimistic about it for now, because I don't know. I don't trust it. You were talking about IoT. There's no IoT devices in my home that are actually plugged in, and most of the stuff that I do is self-hosted. I barely use any cloud services. I don't use it for storing much of personal information. I still use my phone, so there is a concession of like me using my phone, which is leaking a ton of metadata.
Yeah.
And it is true that it becomes incredibly prohibitive to completely remove yourself from that equation, because they get you through convenience. It is very convenient to just be plugged in into the matrix at all times. It's very convenient. As soon as you try to unplug yourself, life becomes, there's like way more hurdles on your path. Like, and it's only progressing ever further to, you know, the walled garden of convenience, but we don't know what's on the other side of it. And for me personally, it could seem a little bit eccentric or paranoid, but for myself, I'm trying to delay that moment for as much as possible.
I mean, well, I guess like maybe it's possible to try, but there's just too many. It's too many. For example,
you know, it doesn't mean that I shouldn't try.
I agree.
I can't just say, well, you know, the house has burned down, so the shed might burn down as well. It's like, no, I can still resist it in some degrees, and to the extent that it's possible for me, I will, because I can't just give up just because everybody else decided to do the same thing.
I agree with you, but imagine like you use Google Maps.
Yeah.
You use Google Maps, and there was a time I was using Google Maps on my way to work. So then I was really depending on the map, really, because even if I know the route, I'd like to have this map on.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a day I was on, I was going to an interview, and apparently somehow I have had this route like on my Google Map like for a few times. So apparently I was supposed to meet someone. Somehow LinkedIn suggested that I say hi to the person just because we were supposed to meet at the same location. So I feel like my location was like somehow used by LinkedIn to track, you know, me and this person, we will meet at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. So like, I know your data is being used by Google Maps, like Gmail, YouTube, Netflix, everything is connected. So like, at this point, the only way to escape this thing would be to live in a wood somewhere.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
Like, it's really difficult.
It is.
Like, even when you're buying stuff on Amazon, like you're buying stuff on any e-commerce website, everybody's taking your data. So it's all about the data now.
Yeah.
So like, I, in my own opinion, I really think like, instead of like maybe trying to like escape it, maybe we can find a way to use it better and just like, you know, admit it that this is what it is. But I guess like understand you. It's just how long we did before. That's what I'm not too sure about. Like,
well, you know, one of my favorite science fiction authors, a Finnish guy by the name of Hannu Rajaniemi. I hope I pronounced it correctly because it's Finnish. It's very complicated. He had a short story written about, I read it a while ago, but I think the main gist was that there was like this, you know, like decentralized autonomous organization powered by an AI on a blockchain that was essentially a taxi company. And it effectively made this guy, it was like a car sharing. It was not like a personal car, but rather you like, it optimizes, you can share a car with different people to save on cost, right? So it would put people in your car together. And basically the AI made the guy fall in love with this person because they would tip higher is kind of like the underlying theme of it, right? And it was just not something deliberate. Like, it's just like, oh, when these two write together, they mm-hmm. tend to like write for longer and they tip more. And mm-hmm. so the AI started making it so like the person would take like these different routes to match them together for longer because it was like monetarily incentivized. I mean, it's science fiction, and that was written a bunch of years back, not that far ago, but like a few years back, like before the whole ChatGPT explosion for sure. And I can see it happening. I can definitely see it happening.
I think it is actually because Uber shared. I think with Uber, you can actually use the Uber share, and then you can have two people in the same ride.
No, but the question is, how do we consider it? Do we consider it a good thing or do we consider it a bad thing? Does it go together with our moral principles or it goes against them? And everybody just needs to make that choice. And as I said before, for a lot of people, it's convenience. It's much more convenient to buy from Amazon as opposed to trying to find it elsewhere because, hey, it's going to be a little bit more expensive. You have to pay for shipping. So, I mean, Amazon is this massive corporation and I tend not to like those, but hell, it's such a good deal. Click buy anyway. And multiplied by everybody with an Amazon account who's shopping on it every day, you know, and Jeff Bezos makes his billions of dollars. And like, hey, he managed to figure out a way to make the billions of dollars and people do it voluntarily. So I guess on that, at least on that aspect, like good for him. Should everybody be supporting that type of behavior considering all the weird dealings that might be happening behind the scenes that we don't know about? I don't know.
You know, help me. Maybe... because me, I'm really enthusiastic about it, but maybe there are things that I don't know that could happen. So, for example, I'm on YouTube, I'm watching YouTube stories, and sometimes I'm liking one story, I'm liking one story. So, the more stories I watch, it's more stories that actually engage in, is the more kind of stories that is like YouTube is sending more of such stories, right? But, and now YouTube knows that I'll probably like soccer, or maybe I like. Quotes, or maybe I like dead videos, those kind of things. So what do you think YouTube would do with this information about me? What, other than to show me more of it? Like,
the goal, so YouTube is a monetized platform. The goal of YouTube is to keep you on a platform for as long as possible, because the longer you stay on YouTube, the more ads you watch and the more revenue they get. It doesn't have to be any more nefarious than that, but consider the consequences for yourself. And as a person who has deliberately, I'm not deliberately not using YouTube app on my phone. I watch it through the browser. I watch it through the Firefox browser with the AdBlock extension and a bunch of other extensions. And one of the first things I did after a couple of times I started watching YouTube Shorts is I completely blocked YouTube Shorts off my phone. Like, if I attempt to open a YouTube short, it will show me a screen saying, hey, you blocked this for a good reason. Because the last time I was actually watching YouTube shorts, I was watching YouTube shorts until 4 a.m. in the morning. Was that a productive use of my time? No. But that damn thing is like digital crack. You can't stop. And it's specifically designed in a way so you can't stop. And I recognize it, and I deliberately make it go away. And YouTube is now going to be showing you all these soccer videos. Is that a net benefit for your life that you're sitting there for hours at a time watching soccer videos on YouTube Shorts? You can answer that question any way you want. I'm not saying you should or you shouldn't do that. It's more of a, do you let them ensnare you in their app for hours at a time where you could be doing something different, you know? And same thing goes for like infinite scroll with Facebook, infinite scroll with Reddit, infinite scroll with Instagram. It's just like more. You can't stop. It's behaviorally designed like a Skinner box. It gives you that little dopamine hit like every couple of seconds. in small doses, and people get absolutely hooked. It's effectively an addiction, and it should be treated as such. But that's completely socially acceptable, that everybody's just like glued to their phone. And I am glued to my phone too a lot of times. I'm not going to be the guy casting all of the stones. I am guilty of that myself. However, yeah. I recognize it and I try to combat it, at least for myself, which is a very uphill battle, I gotta say, because they have a division full of neuroscientists and behavioral researchers trying to crack this, like how to make me stay there longer or how to make me buy things. It's like, why do they have one-click purchasing on Amazon? Because a lot of people make spurious financial decisions, but once they click that thing once and it's already been paid for and it's coming their way, if it takes 10 steps to undo that, 95% of people are not going to bother. Did they need the thing that they just bought? Maybe, maybe not. Again, I'm not saying whether or not they should have done it or should not have done it. It's just the incentives on the side of these websites are set up in a way to extract as much value out of you as possible. And if you let them, they will. So I prefer not to let them. And even then, they still manage it somehow, because it's just me versus the whole system, right?
Yeah, I totally understand. Like this is actually okay. Something that I can say I experienced, because for me, I noticed like my attention was like my ability to focus was being threatened a little bit with like having so many social media apps on my phone, because you know you're like working and then like you hear this buzz and then you see, even like now on iPhone, I think you have all this like you delay your notification to different times during the day. But even with that, even just like seeing all these notifications and seeing how many people or how many whatever that you have to deal with, kind of like affect your how you manage your time during the day. So like for me, I've actually had to do kind of like the same thing that you did with YouTube. I just uninstalled Instagram. And since I did that, I've actually not looked back. And it's been like about a year now that I've actually that Instagram on my phone. So I can understand that part. But you see, like to every side of this thing, there's actually like the positive side and the negative side. And I think it depends on perspective. Because for me, being in like e-commerce, I can imagine like I would want people to actually be on like places where I can find their information and actually like sell something, you know, to this type of people. So that's what I'm saying, like knowing how these things work and how to use it, because at the end of the day, you can't run away from it. So we might as well just like join the queue or join the
Borg.
Join the gang, you know, like and just like try to find a way to use these new technologies in quotes, because I mean there's no way to beat it. But I totally understand how it affects other people, because a lot of people have reacted to these things like in different ways. I think there was a time like someone was talking to me about how like they feel it creates a form of anxiety, like when we, you know, like social media, like they start showing like some anxious behaviors, and the infinite scrolling just keeps them. I've read different things about it, but on the good side, like there are things it has its own benefits too. For example, like during the election in Nigeria. We learned a lot of things about the election just because we have social media. Like, there's been many times where we had like elections where there was no accountability. Yeah. We just heard things happen.
Yeah.
Like, we just know things happen. But because we had Twitter this time, like in recent years, we know how things are going on. Like, people go on like the polling booth and like, they take videos and like, you know, this is what's going on. Like, and even nowadays, like news channels are like the last set of people to know what's going on. We already know before you get to the news, because someone probably already put it on the news. But
right, yeah,
just that's just one benefit. And like other benefit, like one time, like about a while ago, when I just started using like Facebook Market, the Facebook
marketing
platform. Not marketplace, just like the advertising platform.
Advertisement. Okay.
Yeah. So like I learned about how like there is like different groups of people that Facebook has categorized into like different sections, and based on like, you know, the things you like, the things you watch, the groups you have, like those kind of things. And it is easy to say like, okay, I want to sell shoes. I want to sell like soccer shoes, for example. You can see like people in like soccer groups, like people who watch like soccer, the age demographics. It's easy to go there. It's not it makes e-commerce easier and business in general, because you don't have to like sit in a shop somewhere and just hope someone comes to you buy from you. You can actually go to them.
Right.
Show them what you have. If it's good, you get sales. If it's not, you know.
Fair enough.
But like, there is like positive and negative sides to it.
Yeah.
And if like at the end of the day we're just trying to hide, I don't know how. Like, I don't think it's a very hard fight. Like, to just turning on internet anywhere, it's you're already connected. I don't really know how much it's possible to hide from this thing.
Yeah.
So I think that's just how I see it. I think it's perspective, and just not to be like insensitive to the people, a lot of people that even me myself. I think at some point I told you about how I entered for like 6 months. I had no social media account, like zero. I just deleted everything from my phone, and I was not able to access. But then again, like, you need to communicate with your loved ones at some point, and maybe
you can still communicate with your loved ones without like the full blown social media. And
which one?
Well, I mean, you can just use a chat app that just does chats and nothing else, right? Again, the problem is that people go there, and you don't want to be the odd one out without like a social media account because everyone's on it. But, you know, I haven't had a social media account, and I deleted most of the ones that I had for a couple of years now. Mm-hmm. And I cannot say that it drastically negatively affected my life. Maybe I just don't know. Maybe I'm missing out on opportunities. But the state I'm in currently, I'm pretty happy with. So even if I'm missing out on those opportunities, if having those opportunities also meant increased anxiety and all of these other things, I would just say, yeah, it's not really worth it. So no, thank you. You know, go out and touch grass is basically what I'm saying. And the other thing, I think we talked about it before. I'm thinking that the internet it appeared at a time, even the timing of it is irrelevant, but it's like, as humanity, we were not ethically and morally prepared to the acceleration of culture that the internet has provided. We just were not prepared for that at all. And now ChatGPT is accelerating it even further. We barely making it with the internet as it is, with all of the good and bad things about it. And, you know, sure, there's obviously good and there's obviously bad, but it has to be balanced out. And to me, ChatGPT just throwing a bunch of weight on a bad side potentially and a little bit of weight on a good side. So now the whole thing is out of whack again. And like, you know, we don't have enough time culturally to incorporate it fully so that it is balanced. And this new thing comes along in technology, like the pace of acceleration is so high that new things come out. Like who knows what's going to come 5 years down the line that's going to upend the world as we know it again, right? And I guess that's just the human condition. But if you think about it, like for hundreds of years, things were basically same. There was progress, but it was slow, steady at a constant rate. You know, people's lives were improved. And then we have this massive increase in the speed of that. And it brought with it a lot of good things too, like poverty alleviation. Like a lot of people are no longer just crazy poor compared to, I don't know, like 50 years ago. And that's great. But at the same time, it brings all of these other things. And do they have the potential of destroying humanity? Maybe. Are we prepared to be dealing with those things? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. I guess the time will tell. But we definitely live in interesting times. And so we just have to deal with it whichever way we can.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're right. Like, yeah, we would have to deal with it. Like, I think at some point there will be some, like, regulatory bodies or like regulatory policies to help make these things out.
Yeah, I wouldn't hold my breath for that, especially because, you know, we have regulatory bodies aplenty, but I don't know, the end result kind of speaks for itself.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see, but I just think like they have like a lot of like benefits, so like I don't think they will be going away because
it's definitely not going to be going away. That's for sure. So it's just something that we have to learn to deal with. But yeah. I think okay, it's like one thing to have a regulatory body. Like let's say okay, automobiles were invented, and all of a sudden there's like automobile accidents and people get hit by cars. So we need to regulate that to prevent these things from happening. Fair enough. A car is a hunk of metal speeding down the road. We can have some safety requirements. We can do all of these things. But things like ChatGPT, they're in domain of like human creative endeavor and information proliferation and information access and information filtering. So it correlates very highly with things like speech, especially as pertains to like free speech. Do we want to have a regulatory body for that, especially like a government-based regulatory body for that? I don't know. I'm not very optimistic about it. I gotta be honest.
But maybe that's just because like I said, from like perspective.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, like maybe there are things that maybe if I know about it, then my view will also be different. But at the moment, I feel very excited about the possibilities, especially like, for example, like with ChatGPT, like I also use like Midjourney to create like designs for, you know, for t-shirt designs and all this stuff. So like, I feel like things that I would have, for me to do these kind of things, I would have had to like do different types of like tools, learn different, for example, Photoshop. Like it used to be like Photoshop, you have to like sit like 4 hours to make one shirt design or one design or something like that. And that would take like a long time.
Yeah.
But now it's just like a prompt away, like just give the correct prompt.
Isn't that by definition the inflation of art in a sense? Before, you know, if you're a sculptor in ancient Rome and you have to carve out a statue out of a hunk of marble, and it takes you inordinate amount of time to acquire the skills and do the work, and then on the output, it's something that everybody looks at and admires. And now I, a person without any sort of artistic inclination in that sense, can go to Midjourney, type in a prompt and be like, hey, look at what I made. And then 8 billion people on a planet do the same thing. Does that thing still have value, or has it just been completely diluted to a point where nobody cares anymore?
How I feel about that is like, yeah, there will still be value to it because even though now, so for example, even everybody knows like ChatGPT can help you to write code. You can have ChatGPT and still not know what to do with it. And then it's like having a access to like weapons, but you don't even know how to use them. So it depends. Knowledge still matters in this thing. And
yeah.
How they work.
Yeah. It's true. Relevant. But you know, the way I see it is a massive force multiplier. And when a force multiplier is used for good, it's good. But when it's used for bad, now you're multiplying the force for bad purposes. And because it's such a massive force multiplier, if these technologies are used for bad purposes, we ain't seen nothing yet. You know,
absolutely.
Like back, and again, we kind of go for like a little bit of darker topic, but the computers, you know, that, or rather like the tabulating machines in the 40s made so many atrocities perpetuated by like fascist Germany possible because, oh, we have these very effective business processes to count people being shipped off on concentration camps because now we have these computing machines that instead of having people do it, we can just do it super optimally. You know, excellent technology used for absolutely horrific purposes. That to me, that, you know, that chills me a little bit. Or not a little bit, it chills me a lot. But now it's kind of it's past. We don't really pay that much attention to it. So it was technology, which was a very massive force multiplier at a time, used for a very, very bad purpose. And this has all opportunities to be also used by very, very bad actors for very, very bad purposes. And that scares me a lot. So that's why I am very cautious about it. And as much as I can see all of the cool, neat things done with it, I can't fully see what can be. I mean, I can see a little bit, but I can fantasize a little bit about all the bad things that can be done with it, and it scares me.
I mean, it's already scary. You see, like, I don't know, I get you. Because there was one time I was watching one of these news, and somebody was talking about how, like, with one of these AI tools, you can create, like, a video of someone, and even without them knowing about it, and then you just, like, create a random video, attach their face to the video, yeah. And some people use it, like make porn videos.
Yes, yes.
Out of these things, and then if you're not really careful and look watch properly, they think it's you, but you're not the one in the video.
Yeah, but it's not even that you're careful. For instance, like I don't have Facebook, but if I'm at a party and somebody takes a group photo and uploads it to Facebook and tags my face on it, whether I wanted it or not, I am there now, right? And so, yeah, exactly. And for a lot of these models, it only takes like one photograph to fully do the, like the style transfer and transplant it someplace else. And okay, these are bad things. Like you can prank your friends, you can do nasty things, you know, paste celebrities' faces over some inappropriate videos. That is quite terrible. Like nobody really should be on the other end of that experience. But imagine the possibility for fraud. Imagine the possibility for political manipulation, even, you know, like, and right now we don't really have the tools for verification of these things, and people are not fully conditioned to be skeptical of these things. Like if somebody calls some CFO at some company and in the voice of their boss tells them to wire some money into an account, they'll probably do it, right? Because, yeah. I mean, it works even through emails, through like phishing emails, where it's just text coming from a slightly misshapen domain name. A lot of people still fall for it. But imagine, okay, now there's a lot of these safety training and a lot of these safety exercises where the company will deliberately send you phishing emails to see if you react to those. And then if you do, they additionally train you to say, hey, we got you, but at least that was us, but you also could have been exploited by some malicious actor. But now with these technologies, you know, I call the boss on a phone. I say, hello, sir, I would like you to sell subscription to a magazine. And he tells you politely, no, thank you, I'm not interested. I get a sample of his voice, do a style transfer, run, not even necessarily text-to-speech. I'm pretty sure there's an algorithm where I can speak directly into microphone and it'll process it in real time, right? Yes, and then I call the CFO of the company and say, oh, hey, so-and-so, could you please wire $1 million to this account? 20 minutes later, you know, a company is $1 million poorer. Like, easy.
But you know,
today,
but
today, you can do it today, right now.
Yes, absolutely. But you see, when it comes to fraud, no matter what kind of technology that we have, fraud will still be possible. Fraud didn't just start in the 21st century.
Yeah.
It has always been there.
It
even
has
when there was
always been
internet.
There, but, you know, right,
even when there was no internet.
Right now, there's this window where it's already available for fraudsters. But this much time needs to pass before people will start mentally registering that it could be the case and take measures around it. So now it's like a wide open field of possibility for criminals to exploit to their heart's content. And it's probably going to be like a couple of years before like something is done properly about it. But anyway, I think we're talking about it for way too long. And it kind of turns into a rant a little bit, so yeah.
I mean, it's one of those things. We just get to learn about
Let's agree to disagree. We'll see how it plays out.
It's a perspective thing. So
yeah,
we'll see.
It'll be definitely interesting to see how this thing plays out.
Yeah, you know, another thing is like these days, I'm doing the. Yeah. I know we don't want to really spend so much time, but you know, I just wanted to let you know. Mm-hmm. I'm doing a training, like a French lessons, you know, mm-hmm. like to speak French. And then I realized like you can actually learn French from GPT, ChatGPT, and it helps you to like practice your. So it feels like you're like speaking with someone, mm-hmm. actually texting with someone, but in French, and then you can practice like different grammars, grammatical structures, and all this kind of stuff.
And
actually, for me, now I found myself being challenged by like this AI tools. Like, even if you don't want to like spend hours to read tutorials, ever since I have ChatGPT, I adopted ChatGPT. I spent less time actually watching like 2 hours or 4 hours YouTube tutorial or tech tutorial. Like, if you want to learn something, mm-hmm. you can just like. Go straight to the point, learn exactly what you want to learn. Sometimes you'll be doing some research and then you have to spend like 2 hours to learn quick. So someone says like, oh, it's like a quick tutorial or something. How'd you say that? Whatever, like quick tutorial on like a certain topic, but you spend like 3 hours there. And then at the end of the day, it's just like a basic thing.
Yeah.
That you spend 3 hours talking about.
Yeah.
With this thing, you can actually like, but I get it. Like, at the end of the day, it's a perspective thing. It's based on how you see it, and that's probably how like the reaction will come up.
But I'm definitely more on a Luddite side of things with these things. So, you know.
Well, what in technology does this is exciting you?
What new technology is exciting to me?
Yeah. Like, is there anyone that's actually, even like maybe in tech or anything, like technology wise, that's exciting?
I don't know. It's hard to say. Like, besides the software revolution with AI, like, has mm-hmm. there been new technologies that are like truly new lately?
I mean, there's been a few. Like, for example, like programming languages.
Right, but like the programming languages, like, I don't feel like there has been a truly new paradigm. It's mostly sticking to what we had before. It's just doing it slightly better, or it has like some big idea about it, and they focus on that big idea. But for most part, they are roughly the same. I mean, the syntax is different, but it's like, has there been like a completely new paradigm of doing things, which I don't think there has been. And I don't know if it, not for lack of trying, but
somehow, you know, like I've worked like for the most part of my career so far with a lot with JavaScript. Mm-hmm. But these days, when I do Ruby, I find like, although like the entire idea is still the same thing, you know, like you have your classes, you have your methods and, you know, basics, the basics, right? Mm-hmm. There are some little things that might be a bit different. I know you also did Ruby,
yeah,
and JavaScript. So, like, do you find these two tools, like, do you find differences in it?
Of course. I mean, Ruby is a completely different language compared to JavaScript. In fact, it's, like, even different in its origins because mm-hmm. Ruby is ultimately, like, a truly object-oriented small talk inheritor, and it has very strong capabilities for like metaprogramming and things like that. You can do a lot of really crazy stuff with Ruby.
Exactly.
That you can't really do with JavaScript. At the same time, saying all that, you know, last time we talked about, you know, being very clever. You can be very clever in Ruby, mm-hmm. but is that a good thing or not? It's hard to say because, again, it gives you a lot of power, but as we know, with great power comes great responsibility, and not many people wield that correctly because, you know, you can do things with it that make it very hard to understand what's going on. So if you're just playing around and doing kind of neat, clever things, sure. If you're dragging that stuff into production and you're the only person that can understand even remotely what's happening, is that a good thing or not? Maybe it's a good thing for your job security, but for your team at large, mm-hmm. it might not be so great, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, there are new languages that I'm excited about. I think I mentioned Zig before, and it's something that I kind of want to get into. So maybe after I learn enough DaVinci, I'll focus my attentions on that.
Zig, you said.
Zig, Z-I-G, yeah.
It's Zig.
Yeah, it's kind of like new iteration of C with it tries to be kind of like Rust to C in terms of all the cool things you can do with it, but without the Rust's borrow checker that will twist your brain in several knots before you understand what's going on. And I this is from a completely layman's idea about both of those languages because I only kind of learn about them in passing. I could be way off base here, but that's how I perceive these two. Yes. So, because I looked at Zig and I looked at Rust and I'm like, oh Jesus Christ, this borrow checker thing. I have some idea what's going on in terms of like the overall algorithm, but you mm-hmm. start reading about all of the knots people have to twist themselves to satisfy the borrow checker and make the thing compile. They say mm-hmm. that once you make it compile, it will be very guaranteed that it will do exactly the thing that it's supposed to do. So I guess that's a good thing. But I'm not that smart, it feels like.
I mean, first of all, I've never even heard about Zig before, but it'd be cool. Maybe it's something I can check out in my vacation. We'll see.
Yeah.
But you know what? Like, how do you motivate yourself like to learn all these things? Because like, there's a lot of them, right? And some you would probably never really use.
Yeah, you know, a lot of times, if you're working in a specific language,
mm-hmm.
you kind of miss some of the features that other languages have. And you're like, oh man, I wish my language had this. You know, and eventually this new language pops up that is very similar to what you do and what you love. And it also has those things that you wanted for such a long time. Mm-hmm. And you get excited about it, like, ooh. It has all of those things that I kind of reached for and never truly grasped because they don't exist in my language of choice, but they do exist in this new thing. So maybe if I learn to use this new thing, all of my problems will be solved. But, you know, we all know how those things end. Usually there's like a whole new set of problems that come out and you start wishing for yet another things out of it.
When I was working in Hoselton, I used to be like, you know, we were like, oh, we are with myself. It's like, you never know, you might have this project, you might have that project. It gives you opportunity to work. But these days when I just like working in a single team, like in the team, mm-hmm. I feel like, I think maybe I need more motivation to actually like, you know, get into new programming languages. Like, yeah. I just feel like, yeah, it's okay. It worked. But mm-hmm. maybe, I don't know if I'm doing myself a disservice. I mean, because at the end of the day, you never really, there was a time where I spent a lot of time learning Golang.
Yeah.
And I was getting into it. But then again, like, it's been like almost like 2 years now or 3 years now. I've not even touched that.
To me, you have to use it. You have to actually use it. Because exactly. Theoretically, I read some Golang tutorials and documentation, and theoretically, mm-hmm. I read Rusts and I read Zigs and I read like something else. And because I don't use them on a daily, my mm-hmm. practical skill in all of these languages is exactly nil. So for me, it's absolutely useless. I mean, it's nice from like sort of a research perspective because you can take a look at it and be like, oh, it has like this feature and it has that feature, and I kind of like that and I kind of like this. But unless you're actually writing something in it, for me, that's just a non-starter. So, you know, right now I'm trying to write this little program just to, because now, you know, we have to share our video recordings to make this podcast happen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and, you know, we need a place to upload them. And I thought, hey, you know, I have my infrastructure. Is there like some simple to use uploader that I can deploy on my server? And there isn't really that satisfies my feature set. So I'm thinking, well, maybe I can write one and I'll write it in Node to kind of mm-hmm. prove the concept. And once mm-hmm. I have my backend in Node, I can take a stab at rewriting it in Zig because I'll already have something that functions that I can use on a daily, but then I can rewrite it in Zig because I understand what I expect to come out of it. And I can learn a new language and I can take my time because the functionality that I need, that I actually need, is already present and being served by something else. And it'll be this interesting exercise, I feel. So we'll see if that happens. Yeah, I was even thinking of maybe like streaming it as I'm doing it. So we'll see. Maybe I'll do that too.
Yeah, that would be really nice. You could do that.
Yeah. The thing is, with streaming, you have to have a habit of sort of talking with the audience and with yourself as you're doing it. Because mostly when I code, if I talk, it's just to say some choice words when things don't work. So it wouldn't be particularly interesting to watch.
You use like curse words?
Oh, of course. You know, of course. If something doesn't work, it's all, oh no, all the gamer words come out.
Yeah, you curse in English or in Russian?
It's a mix. I try to derive from multiple languages, you know, because, you know, different languages have different curse words. And if you remember, I think it was Matrix 2, the scene with the Frenchman when he was cursing and he was like doing it in French. And it just sounded very, very, very nice. So, you know, I use Russian. I use English. I use a little bit of German. I use a little. I don't speak German. I learned German in school, but I know a little German curse words so that I can. They pop up every once in a while in my repertoire. Oh, okay. Yeah, or Italian or Japanese or whatever. You know, you gotta mix and match. Make it interesting. Or keep it interesting.
Your arsenal is large. Your arsenal is large. Yeah. So.
If I could learn, if I could speak all languages mm-hmm. that I could curse in, mm-hmm. my life probably would be very different.
Yeah, you probably speak a lot more languages.
Exactly.
You speak Japanese,
exactly.
German,
yes.
And that's a lot.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, these are all the questions I really wanted to check with you today, just to learn about this thing.
Yeah,
we spent
a
lot of time talking about AI. I'm excited about it, but I know maybe there are things that
might be cheating,
but I'm willing to admit to it that
I think the other thing too is with AIs, because they literally just came out yesterday, both of our experiences are basically the same. So I don't have any sort of sage tales of wisdom about it because I'm in the same exact position that you are. So all of my advice is just completely a speculation. And you could be right, I could be right, and maybe none of us are right and something completely different happens.
Absolutely.
So we'll see. That. We'll see how it comes out in the wash.
Yeah, in 10 years, we'll see.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
10 years, yeah. At least, give or take.
Unless, you know, some evil Skynet completely takes over and destroys us all.
That's not happening. Or maybe AI.
You don't know that.
That's not happening. Maybe robots.
Yeah.
Like,
you know, there was the science fiction story about when humans developed a general AI and they launch it and the first question they asked it, like, is there God? And it responds, there is now. And they try to shut it down and just completely prevents them from shutting it down. It was like a short story. That was a short story written like somewhere in like 1950s or something. I don't even remember the author.
Fiction. That definitely has to be fiction. That has to be fiction. That cannot be true. You mean that might be true? You think that's true? Do you believe it?
Well, we'll see in 10 years.
We'll see in 10 years. I mean, in 10 years, ChatGPT will be very smart because we would have learned a lot of things.
If it'll be so smart, who'll need us?
That's the thing. You see, they will still need us. Even if ChatGPT will still need us because we actually make these tools. Maybe some of us will no longer have to only like work in a specific city. For example, right now, I work in like web development.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe at some point, that's the beauty about like tech. There's different.
In that aspect, I agree with you. I think there's a lot of people saying, oh, you know, ChatGPT will just make everybody lose their jobs. But, you know, so many technological innovations have happened that where people were saying exact same thing. And somehow most of us are still gainfully employed. So, you know, we're a crafty bunch. We'll figure something out.
Of course. At the end, maybe like many, for example, like many companies will start including like AI into their web applications and like, you know, some form of AI, like at least like
yeah
or something like that. So like
although there was an interesting idea voiced recently by someone that said now you have to be that much better because if AI can do your job, you know, like I don't know, if you're not good enough so that AI can replace you at your current job, can you find a different job? Like, you have to be that much better now because AI is literally breathing down your neck for all the mundane tasks that people do. So maybe this time it's different. I guess we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. But you see, like, about that, like, I was just going to say, like, when you use... or maybe the way I use ChatGPT in my personal projects, like if I'm learning something, maybe I check something like how to do something.
Mm-hmm.
I learned this thing and I know how it works now. So now, even though like I asked the question to ChatGPT, I've also gained knowledge that would have taken me several hours of going through like Stack Overflow. But like going through different blogs and different people's website, I get it within like 2 minutes or 3 minutes. I know how this thing works now. Or like even if I have to read like an entire documentation of this from ChatGPT, I feel like we're both learning. It's learning. I'm learning, and me being the human, I have the upper hand at this point.
Maybe
ChatGPT, yeah, for sure. Like I think so. Actually, maybe the way I see it. I think, like, I have an upper hand because, you know, like I said, most of us will probably have to pivot into this thing at some point. Like, maybe this web development will no longer just be, like, web development and we're just, like, you know, concerned with just interactions anymore. Maybe we would really have to, like, automate the interactions and, like, do some and things like that. But we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I think it's still, it's pretty good at Hello World level stuff, but it's still kind of crap at anything slightly more sophisticated. So I'll have enough time to, you know, retire before they completely take over. And that thought warms me up at night.
Are you really planning retirement?
Well, I mean, my retirement is like 20 years down the line. So I don't know if we'll if I'll have even that long. We'll see.
Fair enough. 20 years. Okay, fair enough, actually. Fair enough, 20 years. It's a long time.
Yeah.
We'll see.
All right. Well, this has been fun. We will be talking again. Maybe not next week because it's the long weekend here in Canada land, but sometime after that.
Okay.
So, yeah. Thanks, everyone, for joining.
Thank you.